Okay, today is Monday, February 22nd, 2021. Jack, do I have it right this time? Okay, Baruch Hashem. And I want to say hello, or I have to say have a good night, or the middle of the night, how do you phrase it, 2 a.m., 1 a.m., to all my wonderful students on the screen. And ani modela Kadosh Baruch Hu, my health keeps on improving. Next week I have a meeting with my doctor, and I trust I'll do some blood tests, and I hope by Pesach I'll be able to say that I'm 100% back to where I was before. I'd like to dedicate the Shiur this morning. It was just the yahrzeit of a Talmud of mine from the very early years of BMT. I knew him as Harry or Tzvi Grinstein, and this is the story of BMT. He's a young man, came along. His parents were Holocaust survivors. His father was very unique. I heard this from many Talmidim. He ran a Shomer Shabbos grocery when the blue laws were still in effect. That meant he lost 2 days a week. And all my Talmidim knew him, and Harry was one of the boys. And that half year in BMT changed his life. Years later, he came in Aliyah with his family from the five towns. Children are all raised here, integrated. His son is looking at me right now, Rav Yeshua Grinstein, who's a second generation student, a son of a father who I had the privilege of teaching both of them. And this is one of the wonderful stories of our generation, our whole history. You look at the Grinstein family, Europe, Holocaust survivors, the United States, the five towns, and Baruch Hashem, Eretz Yisrael, Medinat Yisrael, and all that goes with it. So I want to dedicate today's shiur in Tzvi Meir ben Moshe Yehonatan Grinstein. Regarding some past shiurim, I have a flock of emails. Regarding Rav Heschel Schechter Sr., I thanks to Ipolichevsky, he got the information. He went to Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin for elementary school and Torah V'das for high school. And from there, he went to Yeshiva College and Reitz, and he was one of the students during the transitional period from Rav Moshe Soloveitchik to Mori Rav Yosef Dor Halevi Soloveitchik. Now, I've gotten this question. Evidently, this was said in public in Flatbush a few weeks ago by a very important Rav Rebbe, Torah V'das graduate, Rabbi Yisrael Reisman. And some of you should recognize the name if from the Flatbush area. He's a very popular speaker and has a wonderful following. So in one of the shiurim, he was speaking about how when you're part of a chevra, you go along with the people. In other words, if you live in Kibbutz Adati, I would imagine you're not going to wear a black kippah, you're going to wear a knitted kippah. You're part of the crowd. If you live in Beitar, even if you're a tremendous Zionist, you're going to wear a black hat like everyone else. All right, then? This is understandable. And Reb Yisrael Reisman said something about Reb Shraga Feivel Mendelovich, that when the Rav came to America, he invited him to become the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah V'das, but he made three Tanayim. And he mentioned one of the Tanayim, and it's Narish Gemacht. He said about Reb Mendelovich, he made a bad mistake here. And the he mentioned, the one concept that he mentioned was, or the one condition, was that the Rav's wife should cover her hair. And some of you know, I've lectured on it extensively, and so I'm not going to go into it now, but in Lithuania and parts of Poland, it was very common that the greatest Rabbanim, their wives did not cover their hair. In public, perhaps they wore a hat, but in the house they didn't cover their hair. And in general, Talmidim saw the Rebbetzins without their hair covered. It's why and when and where is not for now. But this is a fact. If I would mention all the names I know of Gedolei Yisrael who came to America and their wives didn't cover their hair, I would have to spend a half hour. The best story is, well, I'm not going to mention a name, but there was one Rosh Yeshiva's wives, after all the other women started covering their hair, she didn't cover her hair until the 1970s, and her husband was the Rosh Yeshiva of a very important yeshiva. And the Talmidim cynically said, yeah, the Rebbetzin is finally covering her hair. When she started to lose it, she decided to cover it. So Rav Reisman said that Mr. Mendelevitch made a bad mistake here. Why? Because had the Rav come to MTV, the Rebbetzin would have been part of the crowd and just like everyone else covered their hair willy-nilly, whether they did it out of they wanted to or social pressure, she would have covered her hair too. So I was asked by many people, is there any truth to this? All I can answer is I never heard this story in all the decades that I was close to the Soloveitchik family. The Rav came to America to become Rosh Yeshiva in Chicago. Chicago sent a telegram to Reb Moshe, we kept our word, we brought your son, but we can't hire him, we have no money. It was the Depression, 1932. Find a rabbinate on the East Coast. And that's where Reb Moshe started looking. I go to Sarabanim and Boston opened. Rabbi Krieger had died already. They needed a replacement. Rav Avram Abba Krieger, he was caught up in big machlekes with Kashrut, a lot of heartache. He was an Adam Gadol, but the Kashrut in America was the Wild West. And the Rav wound up in Boston. And I can tell you from my research, and I'm absolutely right, the family, the older members of the Soloveitchik family certified my results, my conclusions. The Rav had one dream in the 1930s to be like Reb Lazer Silva. I've spoken about this many times. By the 1940s, his whole world changed and his going to Yeshiva University and looking to the Rav Volume 2 by my good friend Darren Rakefet, and you'll see what the Rav had to say, what Yeshiva did for him and his goals and visions in life. So I never heard this story. Anything is possible, but no one knows what the other Tanoim were, but Rabbi Reisman said this in public, and I cannot confirm it. I'll put it that way. All right. Regarding the Baumel family, I have an email from Rabbi Mark Dratch, whose first wife, Zichrona Levracha, who I knew quite well, Sarah Lamb. Hard for me to say Zichrona Levracha, but wife has to go on. He wrote to me that I corrected myself correctly, that the author of the Emek Halacha was Rabbi Lamb's maternal grandfather. It was Reb Yoshua Baumel. Rab Yosef Baumel was the founder, that was a nephew to Reb Yoshua, and he was an uncle, of Rabbi Lamb. He was the founder of the yeshiva in Crown Heights, was Rav of the shul there. I knew him quite well. He was a very, I would say, dignified individual who mastered the American scene and then spent his final years on Rehob HaHara'am in Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. So I'm happy to see you got that right. An interesting David Newman, that's Vic Snow's relative by marriage from Cleveland, also a wonderful individual, son of a Hasidic survivor, raised children with Hasidic overtones in Cleveland. I mentioned in relation to Reb David Leibovich that he helped the Chafetz Chaim with the Mishneh Brura. So David Newman wrote to me that every book of the Chafetz Chaim, the family looked at and checked, and it's even said that the women in the family helped out. But we're talking about two different things. And let me make myself clear. Again, I took for granted that you have this knowledge, but let me make myself clear. The Chofetz Chaim, on every volume that he published, six volumes, each volume he worked with, sometimes it was his sons-in-law, the sixth volume he worked with Reb David Leibovich, all the Rishonim. Did he have it right? Did he check it right? Did he reach the right conclusions? In order to work with the Chofetz Chaim, you had to be an A number one Talmud Chacham. What David Newman is talking about, in those days, it's not like today, everything is done by the computer. You rarely get a book that is misprinted. It happens, but it's rare. Sometimes with the binding, there'll be a problem. In those days, there were many problems with the printing. Type was set by hand. You would pick out a letter. There could be mistakes. The machines didn't work. The Chofetz Chaim was so worried that he'd sell Benjamin a sefer that had misprints. It's a mekach taot. He had no right to take the money. Every sefer was checked by the family, and they would write on the sefer muga, that the sefer was checked. David Newman's brother has a Mishnah Brura that someone, either the Chofetz Chaim or a member of his family, wrote on it, Muga. It's a collector's item. So David, I trust I've straightened that out. Dr. Zismore, who I admire his knowledge, has taken issue with me a number of times. He's also evidently a Bronx boy, and he's upset that I say, I was growing up in the Bronx, there were 700,000 Jews, maybe there were 10 Shemesh Shabbos families. He says, there were more. My dear students, don't take me literally, take me figuratively. I know in the East Bronx there were more than 10, but believe me, out of 700,000 Jews, how many were Shemesh Shabbos in the 1940s? That's what I'm talking about. It was a nightmare. They laughed at you if you wanted to be a Shema Shabbos. Literally, they laughed. Was Arav, Arebitzin, they mocked you. They mocked you. Don't want to use the word, that the pejorative word that was used, the Yiddish word, or who knows what the word was, achnuk. It was terrible. The influence of the survivors, by the 1950s already, the world begins to change. Also, Dr. Zismore mentions that there were Rabbanim in New York and their children. That alone gave you more than 10 families. I just want to mention, out of the rabbi's children, some taka became tzaddikim, chassidim, talmidei chachamim, and some of the children, Hashem Yirachim, the famous Rabbanim, what their daughters, what their sons did to them. Okay, now I want to come back to what we're speaking about, and it seems my mentioning of Reb Shlomo Hyman brought forward a lot of memories. Take a look how much correspondence I received regarding Reb Shlomo Hyman. And here I want to come back and say a few more words about him. You'll see later in today's shiur, I'm going to touch upon one of the most fascinating moments in all our lectures on Torah history in the United States. But Reb Shlomo Hyman, there's no question that he was a Litvisher Gadol. He was a Talmud Mufak of Reb Reuven Gazovsky. He was Rosh Yeshiva in Ramelies. Ramelies was in Vilna. What's the name? You walk past the building. How many of you have walked past the building on Rehov Ramban, corner of Ibn Ezra, and on the building, Netzach Yisrael Yeshiva Ramelies? So I have an email from my dear student, a very famous student, Rabbi Stephen Przanski. Eli, was he your rabbi? I just wrote back to him that one of my top students these last few years is a Teaneck product. So you know Rabbi Przanski. What you don't know is I yet knew his great-grandparents, and I've already met some of his grandchildren, so I don't have any other student who I can say that about. So seven generations we're talking about. He would walk past the yeshiva and see the name Ramelis. He did his research. My grandfather, my father's father, learned there a few years after World War I. It was in Vilna, and the current name is a corruption of the original name. It began in the 1810s in a building in a courtyard owned by a Jew known as Rab Meila. He says Meila. I always heard it pronounced Meila. He donated it to the yeshiva, and they named it after him. And it was called Rabbi Meila's Yeshiva. As time moved on, they forgot who the donor was, who Meila was, and it became one name, Ramelis. And that's the origins of the name. So that is fascinating. Now, the whole question of leaving for America, and I got many theories here, but I believe I'm correct. Right now, a sefer is being written by Rabbi David Kamenetsky. I think it's going to be three volumes on Reb Chaim Moshe Grzynski. He actually came to see me here because I went through my Silva archives and I gave him copies of material between Rav Lezer Silva and Reb Chaim Moshe. We Xeroxed for him. And I trust he's incorporating it into his work. I hope he'll give proper scholarly credit. Anyway, I understand the first volume came out. I've seen excerpts of it that Talmud sent to me. And it seems to be a very fascinating volume. And he too deals with Piers, the Rosh Yeshiva of Ramelis. And they're very happy with him and very pleased with him. And Reb Chaim Moshe is quite upset to see him willing to go to America to accept the Torah Vadas invitation. But Reb Chaim Moshe has to make his peace with it. You need Torah in America, and Rav Shlomo Hyman seems to be capable of bridging the gap. And we'll see later today who his best friend was in America. Now, I just want to add, you see, Rav Shlomo Hyman, number one, he knew about the machlokes between Mr. Mendelovich and Rabbi Leibovich. He evidently checked it out. He contacted Reb David Leibovich. I mean, if you read the correspondence, you'll see that I'm absolutely correct. And Reb Chaim Moshe was consulted, and from what I gather, again, nothing is black and white, but you have to have a feeling of life. Knowing what had happened, and evidently Reb Shlomo Hyman was a quieter man. He didn't react. He was quiet. He could handle the situation. There would be no machlokes with him. And also, by now he knew what he was getting into. It was quite clear that Torah Vadas belonged to Mr. Mendelovich. So I think this is one factor in why he accepted. I think there may be another factor here, and looking at the facts, Reb Shlomo Hyman had no children. He was married, I think it was 29 years or 39 years. He died young. I think it was 29 years. He died quite young. He had no children. To go to America when you have no children was infinitely easier than when you have children, because everyone knows the United States, Min Geitz Atreifa Land. This was the 1920s, the 1930s. It wasn't the America of today. And you're going to a treif country, you're risking ruining your children. They can become Chalalei Shabbos, Ochlei Nevelet and Treifat. And this was the absolute reality. My father always used to tell me that, and his mother was a tzaddikit, my grandmother, Esther Leah, who died when I was 2 years old of aggravation, what was happening to her daughter in America. And my father once asked her, you are so frum, who will take care of your children who are not like you? And she said, the Ribbono Shel Olam takes care of goyim, he'll take care of of Jews who are not that proper in their behavior. And anyone who went, there was a certain attitude of compromise. But if you don't have children, the problem of chinuch habonim totally disappears. So it's my understanding that this may very well account for Reb Shlomo Hyman, why he could go to America and he succeeded. He caught on in Torah Vadas, Talmud Mavak of Reb Baruch Ber Leibovich. Torah Vadas gets caught up with the Leibovich family, because afterwards Reb Reuven Gazovsky comes to America, goes to Torah Vadas. So you have a deep connection here to Reb Baruch Ber. And he raised wonderful Talmidim. Among his most prominent Talmidim, and many people wrote to me, but here, this is the biography of Reb Yitzchak Shiner, who just died, one of the three great Jews who died on the same day. And this is from a Haredi publication. Very fascinating biography. And you have the whole story of his relationship with Reb Shlomo Hyman. So you have to, yeah, he was married for 29 years. So you have to understand that was one Talmud. Another Talmud was Shlomo Lakavach. Shlomo Lakavach always said his Rebbe Muvhak was Reb Shlomo Hyman. And you can go on and on listing out the Talmidim of Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin and Yeshivat Masifta Torah Vadas in this era. Give you another name of a Talmud, Reb Eliam Moshe Shiskal. That was the son-in-law of Reb Moshe Feinstein, married to his eldest daughter, and he later was a Rebbe in Torah Vadas. He also died young. I think he was 52 when he died. I remember when he died, and he was an Adam Gadol. They described he is an American. His father was a Rav, I believe, on the East Side, and an American kid. And his whole life at gelikt and learning, he didn't want college, didn't want a panasa, happy to be a Rebbe in Torah Vadas, with all that implied financially. And you can go on. Reb Shmuel Brittany of Mir was a Talmud when he came to America, studied with Reb Shlomo Hyman. The Boston Rebbe, we're now going a J to your area, the Boston Rebbe, a Torah Vadas Musmach. And by the way, the Boston Rebbe had no desire to be a Rebbe. I don't know if you're aware of it. When he graduated Torah Vadas, he wanted to be a businessman. If I'm not mistaken, he had a printing business, wedding invitations, etc. You can check it out. And, you know, people who are great spiritually generally don't do well in business. And then he went in, became a Rebbe, the Boston Rebbe, succeeded his father in Boston. The Boston Rebbe was a Sheim Dava. And these were all Talmidim of Reb Shlomo Lahayman. So you understand, he really succeeded in Torah Vadas. A side note, a Talmud writes to me, his almana remarried Chief Rabbi Issa Yehuda Unterman. And that is interesting because I knew Rav Unterman's almana. So evidently he may have been married three times. This may be the second wife. His first wife died young, the second wife. And then there was an English lady. It's interesting that the women he married all had to be able to speak English. That was Rav Unterman's, native language, but certainly the language that he was had terrific facility in. And that's what a Talmud writes to me, that when she came in Aliyah, for years she was widowed, didn't remarry, remained in America. The Talmidim treated her b'dechilu rechimu and invited her to every simcha. And then she went in Aliyah and she married the chief rabbi, Rav Unterman. All right, if that is correct, very, very fascinating. Now, I just want to mention one other factor that in correspondence with the Talmud who supplied me with tremendous information on Shlomo Hyman, and his Sfarim will later publish two volumes of Chidushim, a volume of Drosha that he gave. Very, very fascinating material. And something came up in Rabbi Kamenetsky's volume that was published. And here I want to go on record as making a correction. I understand he's trying to do a scholarly work, but I guess he doesn't want to make the mistake of his uncle, my dear friend Reb Nissen Kamenetsky, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. Hurts me to have to say that. I see him right in front of me. He doesn't want to put anything negative. He doesn't want to publish. So there's a story with Reb Chaim Moisa that again, you have to know the family, the Reb Elia Prujana, Reb Elia Feinstein. So he had a number of daughters. An older daughter was named Badana. Badana was engaged to Reb Chaim Moisa, and Reb Chaim Moisa broke the engagement. And I have to tell you, this is an absolute fact. Badana's younger sister, Pesha, married Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. That's how it ties in with Mori Urebi, with the Soloveitchik family that I'm closest with. You follow? And Rebetzin Pesha, I actually knew. If you read Washington, you'll see how I met her the first time, the schut that I had. This is a fact. Badana later marries Reb Menachem Karakovsky. Reb Menachem Karakovsky was a Gaon Adir, and he was very unique from the Voloshin crowd of Gedolei Yisrael. He synthesized Chochmat Yisrael with traditional learning. He is the uncle of the Rav who bothered the Rav when the Rav was in Berlin to go into the library and to check variant readings for him in Maimonides, in the Kitvei Yad, in the Rambam. And you see, he published Avodat HaMelech. The manuscript was on, I'm told, on the whole Rambam was lost in World War II. God have mercy what Hitler Yimach Shmo did to us. But the Avodat HaMelech is on the first part of the Rambam. I believe it's Sefer Madan, Sefer Ahava, and everyone should own it. It's a classic, classic work. And that was Badana's husband, but that was after the broken engagement. And today, at least in the volume of Reb Kamenosa, he evidently, I haven't read it, but I saw quotes about it, that lo dubim velo yad, that this really never happened. He was, this is not so. The Soloveitchik family told me about this decades and decades ago, and I believe it's mentioned, Jay, maybe you can tell me if Shulamit Meiselman mentions it in her memoir, but there was a broken engagement there to Reb Chaim Moisa. All right, I just say that so historically, if anyone's listening, life has broken engagements. This is part of life. No one has a perfect life. No one can say, I never had Akmas Nefesh. Ein bayit asha ein shum. I don't have to tell you that. This is a Freud. It makes a fortune. The psychologists make a fortune. This is part of modern life today. But certainly in the 1900s already, even in the late 1800s, the world changed, the Torah world changed, the Jewish world changed. We were totally influenced by outside influences, and we paid a heavy price. Now, Rav Shlomo Hyman dies young, and 1944, the end of 1944, and Torah Vedas, as we mentioned last week, has to seek replacement, and they go on. Rav Yaakov Kantorovich, who was Rav Moshe Feinstein's, that's absolutely correct, or which you were absolutely correct, Rav Moshe Feinstein's uncle, and Nebuch, he's there a year, and he falls, and he can no longer make the commute. And remember, commuting is, again, not easy, to put it mildly. The Rav used to commute daily, weekly, I should say, from Boston. He flew in on Tuesday, flew back on Wednesday afternoon. In an earlier period, he drove in, his wife used to drive, he didn't drive. He drove in sometimes on Monday, but they went back on Wednesday. It was rare that he would stay beyond Wednesday. In later years already, when the responsibilities of Boston were less and he couldn't handle more, he was on in age and weakened by illness, so he flew in on Tuesday, but he would go back on Thursday. Spent more time in New York. So Rav Kantarovich is only 1 year, although he retained the relationship. Students would come to Trenton to be examined for smicha. He gave smicha. But afterwards, they brought in Rev. Reuven Krizovsky and Rev. Reuven later. These are famous names, as I mentioned, the Talmud of Rev. Baruch Be'er. He later, Teira Vadas, Mr. Mendelovich, they organized what may very well be the first kollel in the United States in Spring Valley. And you got to remember, Spring Valley builds up Muncie. Spring Valley is a drop closer to New York than Muncie. That's where Jews first went. There was a community there, and it was far away from the big city, which is important for yeshiva. If you've ever gone to Voloshin or Mir, you know what I'm talking about. And Rev. Reuven already basically ran the kollel, divided his time, came into New York part of the week to give a shir in Teira Vadas, but Rev. Reuven plays a very big role in organizing the first kollel in America. Rev. Reuven Krizovsky, like I told you, was very famous in the yeshiva world because they credit him with keeping Reb Aaron Cutler in the yeshiva world and not going to university and joining his sister. We spoke about it last week. Following Rev. Reuven Krizovsky, you have to bring in another personality because you need someone full-time in Brooklyn, and that's Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky. Now, Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, you can get all the details you need from the biography biographies, the same author, Jonathan Rosenblum. Jonathan Rosenblum. It's a very fine biography because that biography, a lot of the information was supplied to him by Rav Nassim Kamenetsky. Nassim Kamenetsky, later, after the biography is finished and comes out, that's when he takes the material he had organized for Rabbi Rosenblum, I don't know if he has smicha, but for Rabbi Rosenblum, and that's where he goes on to the first volume, which becomes the only volume, his first volume with it. A and B, one star, two stars. They're two, it's about 1,300 pages together, The Making of a Gadol. And what we lost out because of what happened to Reb Nassim is he never went further. The Making of Gadol only covers the very first period of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's life. We lost out on the follow-up, the second volume, the third volume. It's sad, but all right, that's the reality. Now, what's fascinating about Reb Yaakov, he came to America in the late 30s. He first was in Canada. He was in Canada well into the early 40s. And he already had a yeshiva in Canada, had a shul, had tremendous influence on the people in Canada. And you're sitting here, if you look out the window, you will see the influence that he had. And what am I talking about? Machon Lev. Zev Lev was a Canadian boy. He grew up at the lap of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. And his entire gestalt, his entire outlook was forged by Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky. And here you have Machon Lev, which is a direct influence. He consulted with Reb Yaakov, he organized it. We're talking the late 60s now. And Reb Yaakov's only klal, only tenai, only condition was don't call it a yeshiva, it's machon l'technologia. Then if you don't call it a yeshiva, no one will object. And even Rav Shach, who already became a very dominant figure in the Litvish world by the late 60s, as long as it's not a yeshiva, as long as you're not giving smicha, he went along with the idea. And that's Machon Lev, and we've spoken about it many times. It's not Yeshiva University, it's not liberal arts, but it's science, mathematics, medicine. You have here nurses. When I say medicine, you may have physicians' assistants.
Business.
You believe me, business. Some of the Machon Lev graduates have become multi-millionaires. SodaStream is an example. Was developed right here in Machon Lev. They have tremendous laboratories there. They once gave me a tour. There are certain laboratories you go in, your whole face has to be covered. You're not allowed to breathe. Everything has to be without germs, certain temperature. And that was Rabbi Yaakov. Now, Rabbi Yaakov comes to Torah Vadas, and later, when Reuven Gazovsky takes ill, he succeeds him in Spring Valley in the Kollel. So he, too, ultimately winds up spending part of the week in Brooklyn, part of the week in Spring Valley. Ultimately, Rabbi Yaakov moves to Muncie, and Muncie already is Spring Valley, the Kollel, and gradually it all shifts to Muncie, Spring Valley. Rabbi Yaakov was a very fascinating personality. There are many stories that reveal him, and you see him in a certain light that is very inspiring. But very interestingly, and this is recorded in this volume, when he came to America, he went to see Reb David Leibovich. Reb David Leibovich was a very famous Rosh Yeshiva, Chafetz Chaim now, formerly Torah Vadas. He probably knew, he knew Reb David Leibovich from Slabodka. Of course, Reb David Leibovich was older, but they were Talmidim in Slabodka. They were both Talmidim of the altar of Slabodka. And he went to Reb David Leibovich for advice what to do in Canada, what to do in the United States. And this is what Reb David told him. There is no money in chinuch, but if you want ruchniyut, you can grab it by the fistfuls. And Reb David continued, Reb Yaakov repeated this conversation, if you want to enjoy the world, go back to Slabodka, but if you want to earn the world to come, build Torah in America. And there's so much truth to this. These people came to the States. What could they do? Money, business, money is honey, the whole grind, money. Look, I'm not, I was a kid, I wasn't without capabilities, but I watched money, what it does to people. My greatest story is I'm building the first Orthodox shul in Essex County. Maplewood Jewish Center, Beth Ephraim. The name Beth Ephraim has gotten lost today. I think it's Maplewood Jewish Center. It's a shame, but ultimately you forget who Ephraim Weinstein was. So it's the early years, but I already have some Shomer Shabbos people who have moved to Maplewood because we have a shul there. It was a suburb. It's a suburb of Newark. Today it's not a major shul because there's no housing. All you have are one-family houses. But it's an important shul. It's much bigger than it was in my time. There's an Erev, there's a mikveh, state-of-the-art mikveh. It's Chabad is involved as well, but it's Chabad light. It's not the rabbi is a Chabadnik. The truth of the matter is, his grandfather was one of the top Talmidim in Mir Yeshiva. Rav Shmuel Pesach Bogomilsky. If you go into the 1930s, you'll see he was revered in Mir, but he died young. And his mother remarried Bezivik Sheni to a Chabatnik. And the kids were raised Chabad. It's an amazing story. And fabulous people. You have no idea the Mesirat Nefesh and what, who would ever dream what could happen. But I'll never forget the Friday that Kennedy was assassinated. Remember, my generation, where were you when Kennedy was assassinated? I can tell you exactly where I was. I was in Valesburg, that's the tip of Newark near Maplewood, getting gas from my car. And in the middle of the, then you didn't do it yourself. It was different than today. And the guy is pumping the gas and suddenly we hear the radio is interrupted. It was about 1:04. The president has been shot in Dallas, etc., etc. That Shabbos, I had one balabas, I remember him like yesterday, Rabbi Kaysman. He was a stockbroker. He was a nervous wreck. He was dying. I could say, who knew what would happen to the stock market when it opened? I don't think it opened till Tuesday, because I think Monday was the funeral. You can correct me if I'm wrong. Sunday, Monday, the funeral was Monday, I believe, and everything was closed. I mean, America, the Mashgiach of Panovich, they say, Rav Chatzkel Levenstein, began his shmuis that Shabbos, that min vint gesorgt, dass min dahaget, the president from the United States, wird ich das geglauben? If they would tell me they killed the president of the United States, would I believe it? That's the way he began his shmuas. I mean, be mad. Who can believe it? Who can believe it? Dallas. I was there. I don't know if you've ever been to Dallas, right where he shot the president. It's a tourist attraction. They don't charge. Baruch Hashem, they don't charge. But and on the street, it's marked off where his car was. You follow? It's a street. I mean, cars are going. But on the street, it's marked off in white exactly where the car was. So you see where he shot from and what he shot at. God have mercy. So I saw this stockbroker. Boy, did I make up my mind. Remain in the rabbinate. Remain. Money is money. It comes, it goes. But ruchnius, what you can build in America. And this is absolutely right. By the 1940s, people were anxious. There was a new generation in America. Youth, look what came out of that. The youth in America. America produced lamdanim that can learn as well or better than anything that the European yeshiva produced. I'm quoting the Rav. I'm quoting my chaverim. What are you talking about? Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, a Geshen Sagowski, giants, a Heshel Shah, giants. The ground was fertile, but this is beautiful advice. And there's a footnote here that the person giving this advice was absolutely an example. They tell about Rav David Leibovich that at times, when he was running already, Chafetz Chaim, at times he had to borrow money to buy food. Could you imagine? So this was the advice, Reb Yaakov got from Reb David Leibovich, and he went on to become Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky. The stories about him are legendary. I'll tell you the story that I love best, and Ariane, it's in your honor. And I've often, my wife also repeats the story. Rav Yaakov's wife died young. Well, your wife dies young, you have to remarry. It's not good to be without a wife. Not everyone can remarry. And at times, I speak to families, because my mother had a very beautiful second marriage. And you have people, that in Rabbi Pam's family, there was a remarriage of his brother. And I had to speak with the children. I said, it's the greatest compliment to your mother that your father's remarrying. It shows he was so happy with your mother that he cannot be without a wife. You follow me? This is life, for better or for worse. The Rav could never remarry. Rav Ovadia could never remarry. The Lubavitcher Rebbe could never remarry. All right, there are many reasons why. But the Rav Yaakov now, women are lined up anything to marry Reb Yaakov. You understand? You know the story with Yitzchokhan, and I've told the story how many times, Yom will tell you, I've told it 20 times already. I heard it from the Rav. Later I read it in writing. When Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan was widowed, women lined up from Kovna to, from Vilna to Kovna, Kovna to Vilna, to marry Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, wealthy women, beautiful women, anything a man dreams about. And this woman comes to him, and she had been proposed as a shidduch for him first time around. Very wealthy family, from, and she wanted to see what he looked like, take a peek at him. I heard the story from the Rebbe, I'm repeating it word by word. I heard it in Yiddish, but I'm saying it in English. And she came to Rabbi Zulchan's house, and he was eating. And they opened the door to the kitchen where he was eating, and she saw he was eating with his fingers. I don't know. He didn't know how to use a fork, a knife, a spoon. Oh, she was not pleased with his derech eretz. And she now, second time around, Reb Yitzchak Elchanan specked her, and he looked at her and said, I wasn't good enough for you the first time around, I'm now good enough for you the second time around. And he rejected her. And the Rav broke into laughter, but it's a good story. It's a good story. And he remarried. So now Reb Yaakov is looking, Ellie, don't forget what I'm about to say. He chose this woman from Toronto. And they were very happily second marriage. I actually know the family, and part of the family are my students. They should live and be well. They're wonderful people. Jack knows the family. So they asked Reb Yaakov, so many women wanted to remarry you. So many women, wonderful women, from women, good women, beautiful women. What Eishet Chayil, why did you choose this particular woman? You know what he answered? He said, look, I'm teaching in Torah Vedas in Brooklyn. Her son came in from Toronto. Generally, the kids who dormed, they wore the same shirt all week. Well, till they go home, two shirts divided up the week. This boy came to class with a fresh shirt every day. I knew that the mama was a balabasta. That's why I chose her. See, that's Reb Yaakov. You can't, that story, it's overwhelming. You understand? This is the man. This is Reb Yaakov. And his whole life, stories are legendary. His whole life, he was totally down to earth, totally with it, totally integrated. And he raised it's a wonderful family. I don't have to tell you who Rav Shmuel, his son, is one of the Gedolei Yisrael. But even you take Rasson was a Lamdin Mufak. And you look at the English, those of you that have access to Making of a Gadol, in my review of Making of a Gadol, I wrote that Rav Nassim, to the best of my knowledge, is not a high school graduate. He never graduated. He was missing a course in gym and swimming, whatever. I said, and yet when I read his book, I had to hold a Webster's Unabridged next to me. He comes up with words, I don't know. I have to look it up. What is he talking about? Okay, we have arrived. The next year is a moment in time, the next concept. It captures the world in America as it was, the late 30s, the early 40s. And what's amazing about what we're going to get involved with is we have never solved the problem. And every few years I get a phone call, I get an email, people bother me, and all I can tell them is we have never solved the problem. What am I talking about? Okay. Let me add one more detail that I got from the wonderful material that my Talmud, Rabbi Nachum Shmuel Shadrach, sent me. Here we have Rav Shlomo Hyman in Torah Vadas. Who was his best friend? And here you have to understand something. I had a very close friend for many decades till he died. Maybe some of you have heard the name, Rabbi Dr. Professor Tzvi Groner, a nephew to Reb Leibel Groner. Tzvi's father was the eldest of the Groner boys, Jack Groner, Yaakov Groner. He davened with the Gattel, but he was, I would say he was more Mizrachist already than Chabad. He worked for the Mizrahi here, he was a Sheikhet in America. In my time, he was the head Sheikhet in Newark. The big Schlachthäuser in Newark, in Elizabeth. I don't know if that exists today. I think it's along the Midwest, but I may be wrong. Because you can transport the meat today frozen. You don't have any problems. So, Tzvi Groner, people always used to say to me, how could you be so friendly with him? And, you know, we go back, he was an BTA, I was an MTA, we went to Yeshiva College together, we were in... He went in Aliyah at a very young age, long before me. When I came in Aliyah, he greeted me, his parents greeted me. Terrific. They were very kind to myself and my wife. So they would say to me, you're a hawk, he's a dove. You have such differences. Huh? I say, yeah, you're right. We argue, but when push comes to shove, Devar Hashem zu halacha. We both know how to learn on a certain level. And all arguments end when we show this is the proper way to go halachically. And he, very interesting fellow. I was his very close friend on one side, and Chaim's my classmate, Hagrach, Dr. Grach, was his best friend on the other side. So it gives you an idea who we're talking about. Now, Rav Shlomo comes to America. He's a London muvak. He's a Yudapay. He's a Talmud Baruch Be'er. Who's his best friend? Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. Gentlemen, lady, he would go once a month, Rosh Chodesh. It's described in his biography, and you're sure, and in the material I got, beautiful description. Get on the train, go uptown, it's a big trip from Brooklyn to Washington Heights. I have to say, they have it right in Yeshurun. They don't just say Manhattan, they say Washington Heights in Manhattan. And once a month, he would spend a few good hours with Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. They would talk and learning. They would feel totally at ease with each other. They might have had different opinions, but Rav Moshe was the son of Rav Chaim. Rav Chaim was Rav Baruch Be'er's Rebbe. All of you have studied Bichat Shmuel, you know the way Rav Baruch Be'er relates to his Rebbe. And here you have Rav Shlomo Hyman, Talmud Muvhak of Rav Baruch Be'er. So you see, this little introduction already tells you something, that the chasm, the abyss, the split, the cleavage that we have today didn't exist in the late 30s, early 40s. You could have the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas, a bosom friend, an ideological cohort of the Rosh Yeshiva, if she was his Chachamim. This is very important. Now, here we come back to something I've spoken about. There are many versions, but I'll give you the source here so you can... This is worth checking out. Making of a Gadol, Reb Nissen Kamenetsky, the improved edition, beginning on page 527. And let me first introduce it. What I learned in Lakewood, the early 50s. And Lakewood was Lakewood, and it's not Lakewood of today. Lakewood of today is like a tremendous tent where you have thousands of young people learning, not just young people, middle-aged people as well, a very well-organized situation. You got Aaron Cutler, the CEO of Lakewood, is a financial business genius. and the place runs with computerization. You have no idea. They know everyone there. I think there are six different locations that they learn in. It's thousands. It's really an achievement. But it's not like Lakewood. Lakewood in my time was like Slutsk. It all centered around Reb Aaron Cutler. No one checked out on his Shiurim. He was the yeshiva. The experience was learning with Reb Aaron Cutler. So there was a lot of anti-Chabad talk. And one of the reasons they explained to me was that the Rebbe, the sixth Rebbe, when he came to America, gave some talk on Shor Shenoga Chatapara and explained it, the Yetzer HaTov and the Yetzer HaRa. He took it out of literal context. Now, Reb Aaron Cutler got hysterical and called it apikursis. And tremendous break. I don't say the break began then, it existed in Europe. It's a very interesting question. Do we have a right to take the Gemara and turn it into a Medrash? All right, I'll answer very simply. As long as you don't deny the basic pshat, nothing wrong with it. Some of you know Mossad Rav Kook has published, there's an entire volume, and it may be more than one volume, on Hasidic interpretations of Shas. The most famous one is right on How Does Shas Begin? Me'aymatai korin et ashma shel shachr shel arvit. When do we read the Shema of Arvit? That's the way it begins. And a Litvish guy came to a Hasidic Rebbe, and they decided to learn together. The Rebbe wants the Litvak to teach him Shas, and the Litvak wants the Rebbe to teach him Kabbalah. And the Litvak, how do they begin? Well, Torah She Baal Peh, the Pshat is more important than the Drash. Let the Litvak begin. And he begins, Me'imatai Karant Shema Shel Arvit, when do you begin to read the Shema of the night, etc. And the Chassidic Rebbe gets hysterical. That's the Pshat? You are Moritz. Me'imatai, Me'ema U'Me'yira, Korim Et HaShema Shel Arvit. No, is that the Pshat? That's the Drash. But you see, what's wrong with it? As long as you accept the fact that there is a time, circumscribed time in the Mishnah, but that's the Drash? Beautiful. Tremendous machloket. Reb Nosson Kamenetsky tells a story here that at the time the sixth Rebbe arrived in America, there was a publication, and Hakriya Vahakadosh Kedusha, and it states that this publication comes out with the approval of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and they had an article on October 31st, 1940. The Rebbe had arrived March 19th, 1940, about a half year earlier, and in the article, the author states, Shor Shenoga Chatapara, if you teach it in a mundane fashion, and when studied in a large city where there are no fields with oxen and cows, it is really not inspiring to the student. A person will gain nothing spiritual from studying this. The article continues. Certainly, the superficial study of this Mishnah has no connection to the deity and reminds the student very little of God. And no spark of divine light and is beheld in this revealed Nikle portion of Torah. But when Chassidus takes the same Mishnah and begins to unravel it from the Pinimi HaTorah, the Nistah gives us a new light, which reminds the Jew about the giver of the Torah and leaves with the student and participant a deep moral lesson of tremendous spiritual value. Now, you take this article at face value. This article is telling us that to study Nezikin, if you don't give it Hasidic overtones, the student gains very, very little. Now, I need not tell you, this is a contemporary issue. Let me make it real. What do you teach a kid growing up in the five towns in a modern Orthodox home? We're not talking Lawrence now. What do you teach a kid growing up in Teaneck? Kid is starting to learn Gemara. No? You teach him Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Batra. What does he gain from that? Teach him Shabbat. Teach him Brachot. You follow this? Teach him Rosh Hashanah. Teach him parts of Yuma, parts of Pesachim, Arbe Pesachim. It's a very delicate question. When I was younger, I never had a question like this. From seventh grade on, I already was a litvak. You're studying Gemara? Like Gemara, sharpen your mind. Avada, Nezikin, Nashim. These are, later in life, you'll do Moed. Later in life, you'll do Zrayim, Kodshim, Tarot. But we were growing up like that. It's a different world. We began Gemara fifth grade. My Rebbe, read Washington, please. Without reading Washington, you don't know how to breathe Torah air. Read Washington. Study it. See between the lines what the author has in mind. Fifth grade, I had a Rebbe, Machalos Shabbos, who taught in a day school then. By the way, blogs were written afterwards. Rakefet describes it perfectly. It was the same story in Chicago. Who taught? Lo Yitzlachnik. You go to America. Yomo went to America. In America, you're there to make money. You can't make money. You don't know how? All right. He ran away to Israel. He's a Lo Yitzlachnik. You know that Hebrew word? Lo Yitzlachnik. Beautiful word. But I had Rebbeim. They were all business. They failed. In their youth, they learned in a yeshiva. They were all Zionists. They were all Zionists. Some of them had unbelievable Hasidic yichus. I don't want to mention names. Mechalalei Shabbos. The Rebbe told me from Bar Mitzvah, kids would come Shabbos with dollar bills and put them into his chumash. And after Shabbos, he doesn't talk on Shabbos. Put them in, and after Shabbos, he took the shook the chumash, and the dollar bills fell out. You don't realize what life was like then. So this, in my time, by the time I was in MTA, I could make within a year, I could make a laning on a Daf Gemara, Rashi, some Tosfot. But my Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Weiss, told me in 53, if you don't know how to learn by the age of 19, you'll never know how to learn. Today, guys are first starting to open their eyes when they turn 19. It's a delicate question today, because today I was told by kids studying in Torah Shraga that they are all graduates of Frisch and MTA and the Dima. They don't know how to make a landing on a Daf Gemara. These are kids 16, 17, 17 years old, not 16, 17. What, I knew how to learn at 17. Halavai, I could learn today. I had some good mind at 17. Ask Reb Aaron Cutler about Arnie Rothkopf. You with me, Ali? So it's a delicate question. But could you imagine publishing something like this? Well, the Litvisha in America got hysterical. And Rav Shlomo Hyman, Meishela, tell me who Rav Shlomo Hyman went to crying. I just gave you the hint 10 minutes ago, 15, to Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. And Reb Moshe, Reb Shlomo, they were very upset. Noach, it's not a small matter. This is Lubavitch Publications. What are we teaching Shosha Nagachet HaPara without Pinimiyat HaTorah? And then if you take that Pinimiyat HaTorah, you got to learn Brachot. You got to learn Shabbat. You got to learn Tanit, Megillah, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Pesachim. Now what you can do there, Pinimiyat HaTorah, you can't do so easily in Baba Batra. That's for sure. Cheskat HaBatim. And they came up with an idea, and I'm not, all I can tell you is, it's here, I'm giving you a written source, but I know this for decades already. They came up with an idea, Reb Moshe, you have a son, very capable, Yashaber, Mori Rebbe HaRav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik. Ayazun Reb Yashaber, let him write an article refuting Lubavitch. He knows America. He has a shul in Boston. He has a day school. His pulse is on the hand. His hand is on the pulse of what's going on in the United States. Let him write a refute. And remember, Yashaber, PhD from Berlin. People will not treat him haphazardly. This is serious. Let Rabbi Yashaber write. But under a pseudonym, not his real name. Why under a pseudonym? Because the Soloveitchik family in Chabad had a long-standing relationship that went back generations. Reb Chaim Briska, the great Reb Chaim Briska, was very close to the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, Reb Shalom Dov Ben. Very close afterwards to all that Lubavitch stood for. The Soloveitchik family stood in awe of the sixth Lubavitcher family. Reb Chaim was no longer alive when he became Rebbe. Reb Yosef Yitzchak, when he became Rebbe. But remember, who poured millions of dollars into Russia? The Chabad underground. The Chabad Talmud Torahs, the Mesirat Nefesh of Chabad. How many Chabadnikim were exiled and executed under Stalin? I mean, the story is unbelievable. Remember, I know Russia. There always was a Chabad presence. I can tell you, I felt very bad when I was going back. It probably was my second trip. The middle trip, and I meet this Chabadnik, and I tell him, can you take over the class I started? He says to me, I can't do anything but what the Rebbe sent me for. What did the Rebbe send them for? To bake matzahs in the underground. They baked matzahs. It's beyond words what Chabad did. And Soloveitchiks never were critical of Chabad. And how can the Rav don't sign your name? Write it under a pen name. You know, many people have written under pen names, nothing wrong. I remember in BMT one time I said something and I wanted to retract, so I came up with a new name for myself, Yitzchak Shachar. Beautiful. Why Shachar? Because I don't have red hair. Rothkopf, red head. My hair was dark. Shachar, not Edom. Yitzchak is my middle name, Yitzchak Shachar. I could publish, do whatever I want from the Yitzchak Shachar. You play around. Yitzchak Shachar says one thing and Aaron Rakevitz says another thing. Let the world figure out what is right. If one is right, could be they're both right. My dear students, it is rumored. People swear to it. I'll give you some names in a minute. That the Rav wrote an article in Yiddish against Chabad, stressing the importance, the centrality, how basic it is. Pshat in the Gemara, Shosha Nagach et Apara, raise a Talmud Chacham, let him understand what torts are about, what Nezikin is about, let him understand what Torah law is about, how it differs from regular civil law. Let him understand Chayshim Mishpat. Chassidus is icing on the cake, is dessert. But don't forget the basic pshat in the Gemara. That is the heart, that is important. And the Rav wrote under a pseudonym, Zamir. Can anyone tell me how the Rav gets to the name Zamir? What was the Rav? A Levi. What was the role of the Levium? No, you learn Masechet Tamid to sing in the Beis Hamikdash. Zamir, song, singing, perfect pseudonym for Soloveitchik. And fine. Good. My dear students, has anyone ever found this article? People swear they saw it in 1940-1941. They'll tell you where it appeared. No one in the world has ever found the article. Did it exist? Didn't it exist? Forget about Rakefet. I didn't research Boston. I researched the Rav. My student, Rabbi Dr. Seth Farber, what's his doctorate on? The Rav in Boston, the dreamer, the educational visionary. He researched. He searched for it. He couldn't find it. No one has ever found this article. I have to tell you that the Shurin family, and you got to remember that one of the Shurin family is a son-in-law of Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky. Reb Yisrael Shurin says that he heard from Mori Rebbe, Reb Yosher Ber, that he wrote this article. Another Shurin says he actually saw the article. They explain it was published under the name Yud period Dalit period Zamir. In Russian, Soloveitchik means songbird, as does the Hebrew Zamir. Ah, my dear students, this article has never been found. Did the Rav write it? Did it ever appear in print? Keep on looking, keep on searching. Are the Shurins double-talking us? This remains a tremendous question mark. Could the Rav have written the article? Let's go one step further. 1941, Rabbi Revel had died December 2nd, 1940. Reb Moshe dies January, the end of January, 1941. Without repeating all my lectures of years ago, tremendous machlokes works out. who will succeed Reb Moshe Baruch HaTodrim and Lecholam Shekol Niyeh B'dvaro. Tremendous machlokes breaks out. Who will succeed Reb Moshe? There was strong opposition to the Rav by students in the yeshiva. He was viewed as a gudus harabbanim, involved in kashrut. Some of them believed the charges that were being made in Boston at that time wasn't simple. And the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe wrote a letter. It is my hope that the great, excellent, and renowned Gaon Rabbi Joseph Dov Soloveitchik will be selected to sit on his father's chair as the Rosh Yeshiva of the Rabbi Isaac Elkanan Theological Seminary. It is only fitting and proper that he inherit the position. He will bring abundant blessing to the yeshiva after the recent loss of its two heads. The eminent Gaon has the ability to restore the school's former glory, and through him, solace will be attained. I'm quoting, by the way, from a volume written by someone that I think you know, Rakafat Aharon, volume 4, beginning on page 246. It's the last volume I published, and it's on reprinting what I originally published in Jewish Action, on the Rav, on the Rebbe, and their relationship. But Chaim Soloveitchik, I have a footnote here. You can check it all out. I'm quoting Rabbi Shimon Deutsch, who interviewed my classmate, Dr. Grach, Rabbi Dr. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik. And Chaim said that the Lubavitcher Rebbe's letter swung the Board of Trustees electing my father to this position. In fact, the previous Rebbe was ultimately the deciding factor in my father getting the job. The committee was split in their opinion about my father. One of the members of the committee was Mr. Abraham Mazer, a well-known New York philanthropist. He was also a big supporter of Lubavitch. The previous Rebbe called Mr. Mazer and asked him to support my father. His vote was a key factor in the committee's decision to offer my father the job. Benjamin, you have interest in Chabad? Take a look. Why you, Chabad, look at this connection. More than that. 1942, and you fellas again have to realize the sixth Rebbe came to America. He went to work right away in building Yiddishkeit. One of the first things he did, he organized the United Lubavitcher Yeshiva in the United States. And they exist until today. Many kehillot, some of them, I think it's in Springfield, Massachusetts, they say the Chabad Day School is the day school, a fabulous institution. All right, now they've organized the dinner, they've organized the yeshivat. You need money. So in 1942, in honor of the United Lubavitcher Yeshivat in the United States, Chabad holds its first dinner. Fine, a very important occasion. Very well attended. The guest speaker, the keynote speaker, who is it? Mori Rebbe, Rebbe Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. Let me quote his talk to you. Rabbi Soloveitchik cited the Talmudic passage which describes one of the miracles that occurred for Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa. He's quoting the Gemara in Tainat, Chaf Hei Amid Aleph. I'm saying it in English. The Rav obviously gave the talk in Yiddish. Once on a Friday night, it's very powerful what the Rav did here. Once on a Friday night, he noticed that his daughter was sad. And he said to her, "My daughter, why are you sad?" She replied, quote, "My oil can got mixed up with my vinegar can, and I kindled of it the Sabbath light." He said to her, "Why should this trouble you? He who has commanded the oil to burn will also command the vinegar to burn." Atana taught, the light continued to burn the whole day until they took of it light for the Havdalah. What a miracle. The Rav declared that Lubavitch Hasidim, under the guidance of Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, had also successfully demonstrated that vinegar can burn, despite the obstacles engendered by the godless communist regime. Lubavitch Hasidim continued to function throughout the Russian realm. Similarly, the Rav was confident that the Lubavitch movement could succeed in kindling the flames of Torah in the United States, despite the spiritually impoverished American soil, the vinegar would burn. Wow. Think about what the Rebbe is saying in 42. Think about what Lubavitch has accomplished in the United States when we look at it in 22. What is it, 80 years later? It's prophetic, quite insightful. Tell me, do you think that the Rav would write an article against Lubavitch? This is 41, where the Rebbe gets him elected Rosh Yeshiva. 42, where he delivers a talk like this at the first banquet for the support of the United Lubavitch Yeshiva throughout the United States. My own feeling? The Rav saw the article, spoke it over with his father, and they probably agreed that, yes, we need more than just a simple pshat. It begins with Hashasha Nazach HaTapara, but take it, put heart to it, spirituality, that comes afterwards. The Vahashem. Could very well be that they reached the decision, don't counter it publicly, quietly. Reb Shlomo Hyman, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, seek common ground with Chabad. Could be I'm wrong, could be he did write it, but all I can tell you is, and Reb Nesson Kamenetsky ends off this whole episode, and he says, no one has ever found the article. That in his search, he also spoke to Reb Aaron Ben Zion Shuren. That's the father, my dear friend, colleague, Talmud, Reb David Shuren, who had seen the elusive essay. He was under the impression that it was published in a Boston Yiddish newspaper. There's another point of view, it was published in a rabbinic Yiddish little newspaper. No one but no one has never seen it. And Rav Kamenetsky concludes that, considering what the Rav had to say about Chabad and what Chabad had to say about the Rav, if so, Rav Shlomo Hyman sought out the wrong person to counter the Lubavitch essay. But without seeing the article, it is impossible to really pass judgment. Remains with a question mark. Maybe one of you one day will find the article, but I'm more convinced Lo haya v'lo nivra. They might have thought, they discussed it. Time moves on. You don't have a clear memory anymore. But what a fascinating topic. Reb Shlomo Hyman, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. I have a share in all this. I'll tell you something very interesting. And sometimes I have to pinch myself what I've seen in life, what's happened in life. I publish the two volumes on the Rav. And I, by the way, I want to thank all the people. I received so many emails from all over the world, and a number of letters that one lady wrote to me. Her whole life was influenced by my work on the Rav. She said she holds these two volumes, she reads them, rereads them. I felt I want to thank you very much, because whatever the reasons are, I feel my work on the Rav was never fully appreciated. No one understands what I did. They think I'm the editor. I should have spelled out this is not... I take for granted people are more intelligent than the average person is. It's my fault. So I really appreciate it. I want to thank you. I get a call from Lubavitch. You have solved a problem for us that haunted us. From Rav Levin, from the head of the library, a genius, a big Talmud Chacham. And they tell me they have this picture of the dinner that we're talking about, where the Rav spoke. And they have the head table, and it's a fabulous picture because there's the Rebbe, Reb Shmaya Guraye, one son-in-law, and Reb Menachem Mendel, the other son-in-law. And there's a politician, a keynote, one of the guests who extended greetings. I think he was a congressman. And there's a picture of some rabbi. And they didn't know who it was. In my work on the Rav, I put in a pictorial section with pictures of the Rav. One of the pictures, my student Joseph Klausner, you know who I'm talking about, I trust, Joseph Chaim Klausner, Zichrona Levracha, also gone. I think it's 2 years already. Ugh. A very sad life. Never married. I was Masperkim Dafka, Reb Nesson Kamenetsky was at the Hesped, and I quoted the Gemara that when someone dies without anyone to sit Shiva, the Rav has to sit Shiva, and you have to express Nicham Avel, and every Jew is valuable, even if he didn't leave children, but we mourn him as the Jewish people, and you have to have a moment where someone sits down Shiva and people expend Nicham Tzigamar in Shabbos. I quote, it's a whole Hesped, it's on YU Torah, I believe. So he sent me a picture of the Rav. I don't know where he got it. Look in the first volume, I think it's the first volume of the Rav. There's an American flag behind the Rav. And he's young. And that picture's the late 30s. In Chabad, they looked at the picture, and they looked at the picture they had from 42. And that person sitting there that they couldn't identify was Mori Rebbe, Rav Yosef Tov HaLevi Soloveitchik. I want to say, to the credit of Chabad, they said to me, we will not publish the picture till you do. I told them I was working on Washington. Go to Washington, you will see the picture there, with the whole story told very briefly in the caption under the picture. It's a fabulous picture. The Rav, the sixth Rebbe, the seventh Rebbe, and Reb Shmaya Guraye in one picture. Gentlemen, that was Reb Shlomo Hyman. This was America. This is Chabad. This is the Mitnagdim. This is the clash. And look at the personalities involved. It's a photograph. We have photographed part of Torah evolving in America, 1939, 1940, 41, 42. Mori Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and Reb Shlomo Hyman. I think I'll start the next class just to fill you in, and nothing to do with America, but Reb Nesson Kamenetsky, once he got involved with this machleket of Chabad versus the Litvish world, he tells some a fabulous story that I heard, many variations of what happened in Mir in Europe dealing with the Hasidic world. And it'll be a treat after Purim. And then, in the old days, it would be $36,000 to the IOU list. Gentlemen, I'm bringing back to life someone that I heard about, didn't know about, and I subsequently discovered some very fabulous material. Teira Vidas and one of their Rebbeim, Reb Yosef Levitan, who had a great influence on Dr. Kvietz. But due to the strictures of Corona and being alive again, I can't charge. Jack ripped up the IOU list, but at least feel you owe something to the Rebbe for such good information as Reb Yosef Levitan. It's an open Gemara. Ashya de Megan, when a doctor heals for nothing, worth nothing. My dear students, to reiterate, what did we do today? I said, all right, we did justice, Teira Vidas, Reb Shlomo Hyman, the period right after Reb Shlomo Hyman, got involved with the Rav, Reb Shlomo Hyman, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, and set the stage for Reb Yosef Levitan. Technically, the shiur should end now. It's an hour and a half. And I want to say something. I've been through, I need not tell you, it's not easy to be ill, not easy to be quite ill. And it now reminded me of something that happened. I'm tying together Purim of 54, 55. And Aaron Rekefet at this very moment. Purim Teira, a joke, a sad joke. I went to the yeshiva, the yeshiva was Chochem, and the Rebbeim were not Me'ar Echad. It was very different than today. Today all your Rebbeim are American born. They don't differ that much in outlook. I went to the yeshiva. I could never understand it. The Rebbeim, they would talk against one another. They would put down the yeshiva they learned in Mir, Tel, Slabodka, etc., Radin. There was a little bit rivalry there, jealousy. And I'll be honest with you, that got me interested in the European yeshivas. I don't come from rabbinic home. I had no one to ask. I have tremendous yichas, but I only found that out about 10 years ago. Rabbi Revel, my cousin. We're all sitting here because of him. So it always intrigued me, and I have to be honest, that's my research. I tell you, I've published, but I have over 1,000 pages prepared on the European yeshiva. So the big moment in Yeshiva Sfas Chana was the Purim Chagiga. That was the major event of the year. And at the Purim Chagiga that year, they sang with the Gramin, Purav Volk is a shtickel bulk, di-di-di-di-di-di-di. Purav Volk was from Tells, a London Mufak. He was overweight. A shtickel bulk, you know what bulk means, B-U-L-K. Reb Yeruchim Gerelik was not a Telcher. He was a Bradnon or a Briska. And he was volatile. Oh, Reb Yeruchim, the yeshiva had two personalities, then the Rav and Reb Yeruchim. So a day after Purim, they meet, every syllable is true, gentlemen. I was in Rabbi Rogue's class, you see what happens. They meet in the hallway. And Reb Yeruchim puts the needle and says, Nu Reb Leizer, Reb Yishmuel Leizer Volk. Nu Reb Leizer, was haben die Talmidim gesagt afach? What did the students say about you? A Volk? And poor Rav Volk has to say to Reb Yeruchim, what does it mean? He didn't know what the word Volk meant. All right, Reb Yeruchim was a Chevraman. He didn't know Rav Volk. And Reb Yeruchim answers him, A bulk, a stickle flesh mit zwei Augen, a piece of meat with two eyes. Well, the next day we come into Shia, and you know, the whole class is there. Rav Volk sits down, opens the Gemara, shuts the Gemara. Ich will nicht sagen a Shia for euch, bet a stickle flesh mit zwei Augen. I will not say a shear for you. Ask a piece of meat with two eyes to say. And he walks out. 1 second later, the door opens. It was all planned. And Mr. Abrams, you know, if you've read Revel, if you know who Mr. Abrams was, ran the yeshiva with an eye in hand, a little guy this tall. Mr. Abrams walks in. You're all suspended indefinitely for 2 days. You embarrassed your Rebbe on Purim. And we knew, we were looking at it. What are you, crazy? Purim, you have a Purim rabbi, right? What did we do? It's Purim spirit, all right? Suspend Rabbi Yerucham Yerelek, not us. So then we all have to go downstairs, the whole class. I think they opened the auditorium first because we were too big to sit in the chairs outside Mr. Abrams' office. So we had to go in the auditorium, and then Mr. Abrams came in again. He said, look, boys, I know what you did was not that terrible, but I will give you an etzah. Write a letter of apology. We wrote a letter. Everyone signed it, all right? The day later, we were back in class. So it always troubled me, of all the Purim Hagigot and all the Gramen, how come all I remember was Ashtikel Fleisch mit zwei Augen? So now let me tell you, people have asked me, what was it like, you know, Corona? Tell us about it. You know, everyone is worried. Let me tell you what my answer is. The first 2 weeks, habe ich gewen nicht mehr wie ein Stickel Fleisch mit zwei Augen. Got me? The first 2 weeks, I was no more than a piece of meat with two eyes. That says it all. And that says, ties me back to Purim, and ties me back to that unbelievable Chagiga. I want to mention a new book came out, a book that gave me great, great, great joy. The author is Rav Aaron Adler, Rabbi Dr. Aaron Adler, the rabbi in Ohel Nechama in Rehavia. YU graduate, married to Miriam. She was in the first class of women I taught, Machon Gold, 1971, 31 women, and I taught women for 31 years, R.E.N. She was in that first class. In the 1970s, you all know Rabbi Yosef Adler, his older brother from Teaneck, the day school. In the 1970s, he was one of the Rav's Mishorsim, Shamashim. His job was to drive the Rav, picking him up at the airport on Tuesday and making himself available on Wednesday, wherever the Rav had to go in Manhattan, RCA, whatever, he drove the Rav. Thursday, there was someone else who drove the Rav back. Now, for these years that he drove the Rav, he had many conversations with the Rav. The book is called Vayehi Ben Soach Aharon, 70 Conversations in Transit with Hagon Harav Yosef B. Soloveitchik. I cannot tell you how much I enjoyed this volume, and I literally was overjoyed because I know the Rav out of the 50s. He knows the Rav out of the 70s. And it's the same Rav. Rakefet tells the truth. It's Shnei Eidim. One thing I just want to quote regarding Rav Shmuel Belkin. This is on page 135. It's when Rabbi Belkin is dying, the Rav goes to visit him on his deathbed and Aaron Adam takes him. The Rav was notably shaken up by this visit. I recall him telling me something to the effect that if not for Dr. Belkin, there would be no yeshiva! Exclamation point. Once again, I plead with the world, and maybe one of you young people, Go to Hebrew U, do a doctorate on Rabbi Belkin. Do it while I'm here. I can help. I can give you insight. I've documents. Rabbi Vic Geller's volume. You'll have to research the archives in America. But if not for Dr. Belkin, there would be no yeshiva. Aaron Adler, quoting the Rav, not quoting Aaron Rakefet. Very interestingly, 17 years to the day, Chol HaMoed Pesach, the Rav would also depart from the world. The yahrzeit of Rabbi Belkin and the Rav, one and the same. Finally, I have to make one other comment. Until Pesach, we'll break again. It's, I think, one right after Chodesh Nisan, or one weekend, whatever. We'll follow the Kollel schedule. Until Pesach, it'll be one shiur. I have a doctor's appointment. I probably have to do blood tests. I just want to be sure everything is in order and I have my strength totally back. After Pesach, we'll be back to the regular schedule, Sunday and Monday, Be'ezrat HaNotein Yahav Koach. Now, I never knew that my Halacha Shayurim was so popular. I always thought it's the Jewish history where I'm doing something no one else is doing. I don't know, people work on my ego and tell me, Rebbe, the way you handle Shelet and Shuvit is one of a kind. There may be some truth to that because I bring in, it's a person where there's a synthesis in Rakefet's soul of Reitz and Bernard Rebel Graduate School. And that affects everything I teach. So I've reached the conclusion, after Pesach, I go back to my normal schedule. Two reasons why. One, the advice I got when I was a shtickl fleish mitzvei egin was from the other world. Lo b'shamayim hi, the Gemara in Babit Metzia, daf nun tet. I'm not obligated to listen to advice, even though it came from great person. Have to listen to my students. Lo b'shamayim hi. The other reason I have to say is humbling. It's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. Lo alecha hamalacha ligmav, lo ata ben chorin lehi batel mimenu. No one can finish it all. I have so much prepared. I can show you. Yomo can tell you what I have in my office on the yeshivat. I want to finish America first. I have to do Satma. It takes a while. I have to do it properly. I can't disgrace Aaron Rakef. It has to be done on a level. And then we'll go on to Europe. Whatever I'll accomplish. Ribbono Shel'olam, have mercy upon me. Give me longer years even than my mother in health and happiness. You understand? But for those two reasons, I have to go back to my basic love, Shas and Paiskim, Shelet and Shuvit, Reb Menashe Klein, finish Orech Chaim, Brun. I have so much prepared. Och, and Ebenezer, what we will get to. God should give us strength and students with inquisitive minds, intellectual honesty, searching and seeking the Vahashem Zuhalacha. Are there any questions from the... I never had so many students in 2 years already. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. Open it up. By the way, I have stuff for you, Lubavitch. I have the class, I'll give it to you. Are there any questions from the wonderful audience in front of me on the screen?
Rebbe, it's not a question per se on the shiur, but because of Corona, some people won't be able to get to Megillah. I made a tape of a slow reading of Megillah that people can read along if they have cloth.
I understand. And where's the tape available?
I made a recording. I'll send it to you. I put it on Dropbox. So there'll be a link to it. It's a big recording, so it's easier. I did it audio and video, but it's easier to do it with a link so I don't have to send large files.
Yomo,
Schefter mentioned it, Yomo,
forget it. No, don't wait.
I know I had the idea myself about 15 years ago. I may have been the first one. Can anyone help me?
Whatever. It's a very good idea. Halavai, you should publish
that. The story I had is someone who had moved to Alaska, had no one to lay Megillah.
Right, you told us about that.
Over the phone. Okay. I told her it was a hate problem.
Okay.
But I suggested if she can get it. to read along with either
okay.
Reading over the phone. Anyway, so she wasn't able to get a klaf, and I told her to speak with the posek, and we ended up doing it over the phone.
That's a bit. But what you did is very good. Nachum Lam, do me a favor. Tell your parents the story I told about Stickle Fleisch mit zwei Jägen.
Rebbe, I remember you once told another one, because I was in Rehovot and to share at the time, about the Shmurim Mishas Sira.
And I
went to Shira the next day. I said, there was Purim. And I said, Rebbe, I remember you used to write the Purim Spiels, and he didn't
do me a favor. That story you can't tell publicly. But boy, I remember that like yesterday. Shmur with the whole yeshiva, and 2/3 of the rabbeim didn't get it. But Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelik, he was hysterical. I could just see him there on the front table on the side. He got it. That's a bad sign. He knows like Rakefet, Carol Burnett as well. I got a big compliment on my knowledge of Mrs. Wiggins, the secretary. Okay,
One thing, what you said about Rav Chaim Ozer and the engagement, I noticed on the Sfarim blog, they made the comment, they said that if that was true, he would be at least, I think he had to be 19 and she would have to be 11 when they got engaged. So they said things happen, they said, but they talked about it a lot, and they couldn't decide one way or another.
He's 19 and she's 11. That's fine. They get married when she's 13. That was the Maishim B'chol Yom then. But I have to tell you, Tova Soloveitchik told me this in great detail many decades. I wrote down what Tova... There's more things. I can't say it all in public. I also don't want to embarrass Gedolei Yisrael. But Tova told me this decades ago. I heard it from mothers. It cannot be that they just made it up in Veltarein. I don't know how to say that in English. But it cannot be that they just made it up stum, okay? And Tova Lichtenstein had no axe to grind. Dafka, we were talking about the relationship between the Rav and Reb Chaim Ozer. And she told me the background, that there was tension in the family going back, because it began with that. There was other tension. For instance, Reb Chaim Moshe refused to give the Rav Smicha. And, he gave him a story that, whatever it was, I wrote down exactly what Reb Chaim Moshe said. But the real reason was, he was not happy that the Rav went to Berlin and got a doctorate. So you see, there was already a bit of a split with all their love. And I don't have to tell you, the Rav's hesped for Reb Chaim Moshe is one of a kind. If you want a good statement, if anyone wants to know what a good Yisrael is all about, read the Mori Rebbe's Hesped and Reb Chaim Ozer. Study it. But okay, the Rav shifted gears to a certain extent later in life. Yeah.
By the way, I'm looking at a review of Reb David Kamenetsky's Reb Chaim Ozer, a bunch of Kol B'nai Agolah, that was published on January 17th, 21, by Rabbi Yonah Steinmetz.
Right.
It's a very extensive review of the Sefer of Reb Chaim Ozer, and he records the anecdote about the engagement, but he has an interesting postscript. A daughter of Reb Chaim Ozer fell ill.
It's the terrible, right. A daughter of Reb Chaim Ozer fell lower. It was you don't even know what a tragedy it was. It was Reb Chaim Ozer's only child, and she already, I believe, was engaged. And she took polio. It's before Saul from Sabin. And they claim, I don't like to repeat this, because who knows if this is true, that they went to the that Reb Chaim Ozer went to the Chafetz Chaim daven for my daughter, and the Chafetz Chaim didn't give a bracha, and the vot was out that it was a punishment for what he did to Badana Feinstein. Yeah, but I don't know if that's true. I don't know. I can't believe the Chafetz Chaim.
Have you seen this work by Steinmetz?
I showed you. So this Talmud sent to me, there's a world in here, more than Steinmetz. He sent me a world. Yeah, anybody else? We have to sign off.
If anyone wants a copy, wants the link to that, they can email me, and I'll send it.
Mark?
R-A-V. If anyone wants the link to the slow reading of Megillah, Just send me an email, ravdoc@gmail.com.
ravdoc@gmail.com.
At Gmail.
Okay. Mark, how are things in Chicago? How is Zeb Elif doing? How is Turo doing? They took over Skokie. I don't...
You should see, here, here's a new book I've read, it's about Orthodoxy. It's got some interesting topics, I saw. It's called Authentically Orthodox. That's his new book.
Interesting. All right, maybe it'll catch up with me.
Yeah,
okay. I want to thank everyone for being with
Mark,
me.
You're muted.
It's great to see everyone on the screen. I apologize that I wasn't looking at you. I'm looking at a class in front of me. But until we meet again in health and happiness,
Purim
Sameach. Oh, we have here in Yerushalayim a 3-day Purim. Don't get overly drunk, whatever you do. Believe me, on Friday, it's not no mitzvah at all. Shabbos, it's already a machloikis, maybe a suda. But Monday, all right, I'll have a drop of brandy. Vic, you understand? A drop of brandy. And we'll say, close your eyes, go to sleep for 5 minutes, lo yada, your yod say lemahadrin. To we meet again in health and happiness. That's the Danya. All right, we got to clear the room. There's another class here.
Rabbi, I think Minhag Yerushalayim is delaying with the Bracha Rishona, even when it's Megillah Shelo Bizmano, if I remember correctly.
Well, what are you referring to?
Well, Chatzila, you want to get a minion together, but with Corona, it's not going to be possible with a lot of people.
Where the shuls are open here, believe me, it's going to be great on Purim, and the Ribbono Shel Olam should bless us. And we should go mechayel el chayel. I nimodel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I feel totally normal, and the strength level is exactly what was before Corona. So the shtickle flesh mitzvayegin. The shtickle flesh mitzvayegin.
I mentioned to you there's a shita to do mishloach manot on Shabbat.
I know. I can speak for hours how much has been written. Halacha lemaisa shalach manis is Sunday.
All right.
The shtiglfleish mitzvei egin is alive and kicking and smiling. Okay? All right.